if you like betting on golf. But everyone that you back misses the cut. Get some experts involved with all the stats and the tips and so much more. 'Cause it's the golf betting system. The golf betting system is the golf betting system podcast.
Greetings and welcome to the Golf Betting System Podcast 216. This is our 2022 US Open Tips Podcast. Paul Williams and the returning Barry O'Hanrahan join me, Steve Bamford, to discuss this year's third major championship. Good morning, gents.
Morning, chaps.
Morning, boys.
Please subscribe to this podcast as you drive the popularity of the show. This podcast is for listeners of 18 and above. Please be gamble aware. You can visit begambleaware.org for more info. And of course, please bet responsibly. Visit our world-famous golf betting system website with in-depth betting previews, tournament form statistics, form chart, including US Open form combined with current form. We've got a great majors form sheet and our predictive models. All of these features, like this podcast, are completely free of charge with no paywall. We are available on Twitter. Paul is at Golf Betting. I'm at Bamford Golf. Barry is at A Good Talk Golf. You can join our Golf Betting System Facebook group. The link is available in the description box. Plus, look out for the Steve Bamford Golf YouTube channel where I present the Golf Betting Show every week. Please subscribe and like the show. It's very close to 2,900 subscribers on the YouTube channel, so head over there. I did a video yesterday going through all of the reasoning behind my five selections this week. Now, you guys as listeners power this podcast, so we need your five-star reviews on Apple Podcasts. As ever, for those of you who leave a review, I will read them out at the start of a future show. Leave your name and where you are in the review. Right. Cracking pod, five stars. Look, it's very simple. If you're betting on golf, there is a serious need for expert input. Think, who's in form? Who does the course suit? Who will the weather suit? And that's before you look at any metrics. In my view, these guys offer the best broad insight, as you're going to get and keep you right on top of which platforms offer the best value as well. That is from Jono$66. And he is in the UK. Thank you, Jono.
Lovely stuff, Jono. Yeah, I guess that's, in a nutshell, kind of summarises exactly what we try to achieve on this. So, all very good.
How did you enjoy your golfing holiday, Barry, before we move forward?
It was excellent. A little bit windy, but... Yeah, when you're at the very furthest west point of the island, it's very west. You meet the Atlantic, and we were getting one of the biggest low pressure systems I've ever seen. So Friday was the practice round for the pro-am, and so Friday and Saturday the wind was 50 kilometers an hour, gusting 70-80. It was a little bit testing, trying to keep the ball flight down and not swing hard to keep the spin off it and stop it going up into the air and possibly landing halfway across the country. So it was a great week. Yeah, that place is one of my favorite in the world. Going out to Carn, it's pretty special. So yeah, drives into the wind going like 170, maybe 180, and downwind like cruising over 300. It's fun, all right, but yeah, it beats you up when you're playing in those conditions.
We should put a shout out there to follow the Carn Golf Club on Twitter. It keeps coming up on my Twitter feed to follow them. Carn Golf Links, isn't it?
That is it. I'm just pulling up to make sure, for sure, sure.
Beautiful Carn course. Absolutely Carn, fantastic.
Yeah, Carn Golf Links. So 27 holes there. The original 18 was an Eddie Hackett design, and they didn't move any land in creating it. There was no real machinery. It was done part-time by hired labor and farmers. They just hired in staff as they needed them to help kind of do the little bit of shaping. But yeah, real raw, natural. It's just unlike anything else I've really played. And Yeah, it's one of my favorite places to go in the whole world, and one of my, it is my favorite course in the world. I don't mind. It might not be the best by whatever metrics people measure courses, but yeah, it's my absolute favorite. And there was a group of nine of us went down to play the Pro-Am, so it'd be three teams, and six of the guys had never played there before. And on Saturday night, everybody was asking about how they kind of reserved their spot for next year. So I think that speaks volumes for the place. Yeah.
Went down well then. I mean, the pictures on your Twitter, Barry, looked spectacular. I guess you don't expect to run into an ex-tropical storm as you're heading across country on the days leading up to it. But deal with what you got to deal with, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, look, everybody's playing in the same conditions, and wind and things like that are fairly standard when you're on the when you're facing the Atlantic. So, but that was particularly harsh and difficult to play in, probably the hardest year I've ever played in. But it's still fun, and you know, when you try think up some shots and maybe move the ball like 60-70 yards in the air to try get it to your target, it's it's good crack.
Sounds good. I reckon you and I could have got close to 300 yards off the tee with a bit of wind assist, Steve.
Yeah, I'd have got my trusty 5-wood out.
The only one that
hits kind of straight. Been good. Let's talk about last week. It was a historic week for golf. Clearly, Charles Schwartzel won the first LIV Golf Tour, but we won't really concentrate on that too much. I was thinking more historical from a DP World Tour perspective, Paul, and the Scandinavian Mixed. What a performance there.
Oh, Lynn Grant. Incredible, wasn't she? You know, she absolutely lapped the field in the end. Even more impressive was that the next female competitor was down in 13th spot. So, you know, she absolutely annihilated the rest of the field. And, you know, the men, women, all comers just couldn't even get remotely close to her. Bogey-free weekend. It was 9 shots clear in the end. So, a tough one to try and pick out because she was relatively short in the betting. I think just thinking back to when we discussed it last week, I think she was second or third favourite. And, you know, I guess the narrative always has been that generally the men still tend to come out as more dominant on the leaderboard in these types of events. And that was still the case, yet you've got this absolute runaway leader who's played golf from the gods. And, fair play to her. And as you say, breaks new ground for the DP World Tour, which can't be a bad thing either.
I'm looking on the official world golf rankings website right now, and clearly they've got Henrik Stenson and Mark Warren, T1. They both won 19.2 world ranking points. Would that have been the full amount they would have won if they'd have actually won the tournament, or is that basically that is the second place ranking points that they've been given?
No, I think they've been allocated the full points based on their gender, and I guess from the female for the women's rankings as well, it would be saying the other side as well. It's a bit messy, and it does create some challenges in terms of if you're looking back in the future and just glance at Henrik Stenson's record or Mark Warren's record, and it tells you that he won a tournament, which clearly isn't the case.
Yeah.
But I guess they've just had to try and make allowances for it to points off.
I've got to go through this just for the... I don't know. I've just got to go through it. This is Mark Warren's form this year in 2022. Miscut, 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 miscut. 64. Miscut, 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 miscut. Tied first. Now, if there was ever a statement that actually brought together Mark Warren's career, that is it. Because he has done that for the whole of his career. From absolutely nothing, you get a contending, if not winning, performance from Mark Warren.
Yeah.
I've never known such a spotty guy to bet on. You should start betting on Mark Warren rather than Matt Every, Paul.
Well, do you know, he's another one. It's in a sort of a similar kind of ilk who equally pops up first round leader as well and then just completely disintegrates after that.
Auto bet every week.
Stuck around for 4 days.
Auto bet every week, Mark Warren. You know, you're throwing your money down a pit, down a pit, down a pit, down a pit, and eventually you get to about 1,000 to 1, and the guy just pops up at the top and gets you an each way place minimum at some crazy price. It's Jim Herman, isn't it? It's Ted Potter Jr. It's Mark Warren.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a few like that in world golf, isn't there?
Yeah, absolutely. So that was the Volvo Car Scandinavian Mixed. Also a point of notice there, I thought, was Henrik Stenson, who actually, when you've been looking at the stats for Henrik, he does seem to be on the right road, doesn't he? All of a sudden, his trademark, finding fairways, finding greens, strokes gained approach, is actually coming back.
Mm.
So I think Stenson could be one to watch moving forward.
Yeah, equally, he gained nearly 7 strokes putting last week as well, which isn't not a Henrik Stenson trait, is it? So,
no.
So yeah, perhaps there's a bit of life in the old dog yet.
We had a spectacular Canadian Open finish. Let's be frank. I think it was clearly a loaded field at the top end, and then it fell off a cliff very, very quickly. So to see Thomas, to see T2 Finau, Sam Burns, Shane Lowry, all of these guys, Matthew Fitzpatrick, all in the mix throughout the 4 days. And then it came down to that pretty much mano a mano, Thomas versus McIlroy, after they water hosed the greens on for Sunday. They've clearly got a deal, Barry, the PGA Tour, with the Canadian fire brigade as well, because those greens on Sunday were super soft. And it was Birdie City over at St George's, which was, to be fair, that's what the tournament probably needed. But eventually, Rory got the victory. The first time he has ever defended a professional title. 10 to 1, which looking back, is not that bad a price, really, nice man.
No, you'd have had to, it would have been pretty much your only bet, or what, you're only bet at the top of the market had you gone down that route. But there was logic there. I get the feeling that they wanted that kind of excitement and something different on Sunday. And we're probably pleased that there were, Justin Rose was looked dead set to get 59 or better at one point and managed to contrive to shoot a 60 in the end. And then you've got the other guys, you've got Thomas and Rory, who were both flirting with on 59 watch at various points on their final 18 as well, and as a spectacle, as an exciting finish to a tournament, that was right up there.
Rory's having some season, isn't he?
The last man, Barry, to win the week before winning a major, 2014. That is the question.
There you go. I mean, his last five outings, second, fifth, eighth, T18, and first. And he's a win back in October, the CJ Cup.
I remember it.
Adam,
well.
Yeah. Like, Adam, if you can add a major, like, bang, great, unbelievable season.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, he's tried all sorts of different preparation routes for major championships lately, hasn't he? And I guess with the USPGA, he got that slow start issue off of his back. Now he's coming in with that slow start issue gone. There's not going to be this, it's going to be a typical Rory 74 first round and play himself out of the tournament scenario. Now he's coming in at the top of his form, with a win immediately the week before, bouncing around, super confident. Is that the way to do it? We'll see.
We'll see
how it holds up on Sunday.
Wasn't it? There was the year, wasn't there? Didn't he win Open, WGC, PGA?
I think that
was 14, wasn't it? Valhalla?
Yeah.
He had kind of a head-to-head mano-a-mano at PGA in the dusk with Phil Mickelson and Ricky Fowler. Those were the days. Mm-hmm. Looking back,
and Bernd Wiesberger was there. That was
Bernd
such
Wiesberg,
a
yeah.
That was such a great like major. That was.
I was on Ricky. You'd be surprised to hear he finished second.
Brilliant. Yeah, I know. Brilliant one to watch that way. That's great. It's a great rewatch as well. And they show the 1 hour package.
Have you seen the tea times? I haven't actually looked. I've been a bit remiss. I've been concentrating on the US Open for days, and I fancied that yes, last night to have nothing to do with the US Open. So I actually haven't looked at the tea times because they could be quite interesting for Thursday. There could be a little bit of a split, unfortunately, okay. Which seems to be a major championship trend at the moment.
I have them open here, Steve. We can throw some names at the, we can use them as part of the discussion.
Okay, we'll go on to that then. Right, brilliant. Right, so that's, oh yes, just to mention, I did snag a 45-1 each way return, although it had a reduced 33% reduction for ties on Keith Mitchell at 45-1, which actually, on the basis that I had Lowry and Mitchell and they were constantly in the top 10 throughout, and then started to seriously cock up on Saturday just to start throwing that all away. I was happy to actually get something out of the tournament in the end. I thought it was going to be one of those where how the hell did I get a full week loss? Mm. But we managed to snag something, which is what you've got to do on weeks when you don't win. Right, let's talk US Open. It's a unique US Open with the times we're in. What I must say, I've personally, in all the years that we've covered the major championships, I firstly have never seen so many additional each-way spots up for grabs. Betfair Sportsbook are 12 places each way this week, a 50 odds. The odds are, as you would expect, not the best, but if you do want to maximise your odds, chances of a return, 12 places each way, 50 odds with Betfair Sportsbook. There is a bet £10, get £30 free bets offer via Golf Betting System if you are not a Betfair Sportsbook customer and you are 18 plus. Boyle Sports, as ever, are 11 places each way at a major. So 11 places each way at 50 odds for Boyle Sports this week. Again, if you haven't got a Boyle Sports account, you are in England, Scotland and Wales. There is a bet £10, get £20 new customer offer available via Golf Betting System. But we're also going to highlight for the best chance of maximising your odds on a whole host of players this week. 10bet, yet again, they are offering standout prices on popular players with market-leading odds, which you take at 5 places each way, a quarter of the odds terms if you want to each way punt. Now, as we record the podcast, they are offering market best. When I say market best, basically their price cannot be beaten. On 35-1, Tony T2 Finau. I'm fascinated to know if the Finau Whisperer is on Tony T2 this week. We will find out shortly. 35-1 on Shane Lowry. 40-1 on Joaquin Neiman. 50-1 on Cam Young. 60-1 on Corey Connors. Now, the other thing with 10bet, you've got to say, they don't hide. These players are going to be popular this week, undoubtedly. For another great example, take 110-1 on 2012 US Open champion Webb Simpson. Oh, he wasn't 2012, was he? He's 2011. See, these are the little details I sometimes get wrong. 2011 US Open champion Webb Simpson. He's 110-1 with 10bet right now. He's as short as 50-1 elsewhere. And that's what you get with 10bet. You can get some exceptional pricing. New 10bet customers get a 50% welcome bonus up to £50 when signing up through Golf Betting System. That is up to €50 if you are in the Republic of Ireland. You can find details about their new customer promotion, plus a link through to that very offer with T's and C's in this podcast description. So yeah, Betfair Sportsbook, Boyle Sports and 10bet. Three excellent bookmakers this week for the US Open. Let's talk Brookline, shall we, chaps? It looks a beautiful test.
Yep.
Looks very... Everything I'm reading, pure, in front of you, not tricked up, bloody hard. They're basically a summary of where we're at with Brookline. We haven't seen it in competition since the 1999 Ryder Cup. It's had various restorations since then. They've all been inspired by our new major doctor, it would appear, Gil Hans. It's a par 70. We eventually locked down the yardage to 7,264 yards. It's got three water hazards. There's that footage, isn't there, from Ted Scott of one of the water hazards where it's a very thin fairway and anything off centre right of the fairway cants all the way into the water. That's an interesting hole. Mm. Fairways are bent grass with Poana. The rough is perennial ryegrass, Kentucky bluegrass, Poana and fescue. There's a mixture for you. It's 3 inches right up to knee-high. Knee-high fescue. But this is the beauty of this place. This is the real beauty. The greens are 4,388 square feet on average. By my reckoning, there are only two PGA Tour stop-offs with smaller greens, one being Harbortown, the other being Pebble Beach. So I don't think a look at Pebble Beach's US Open would be a bad spot to have a look at.
No.
There was some stuff going on Twitter last night. People were posting up the greenkeeper's fact sheet and saying that these greens are Poana, because that's what it states, which is true. But as you know, I actually emailed the course superintendent, Dave Johnson, and he kindly came back to me and I asked him the question, because this tends to be the fact in the Northeast. United States. And he said, yeah, 75% Poana, 25% bent grass. That's the mix for the greens. So don't think pure West Coast Poana, because as we know, that Poana over on the West Coast tends to be a bit spongy, can get very, very, very bumpy. The Poana here is mixed with bent grass, which keeps it a little bit smoother, but they will be running firm and fast. There's absolutely no doubt about that. The other thing I love about the course, if you want more detail, more trends, more US Open research, please listen to our previous podcast, 215, because Paul and I go into an hour's worth of detail on the US Open trends, what we're looking for, and the golf course in that. So please give it a listen. It is proving very popular. And it really is, you know, get yourself your phone out, make some notes, get a pen and paper. You can make some decent notes from it. And it just helps to shape what you might be looking for from a player this week. Thoughts on the course, gentlemen, and then we'll move on to the players. Oh, and the weather.
Yeah, And you summarised it well. It's going to be a tricky challenge. I think it's going to be low single digits under par. Mm-hmm. Unless it gets super windy, I don't think we're going to be at this kind of level par or one over, two over scenario. I'm expecting maybe 3, 4, 5, 6, something like that to be the kind of number that you need to be aspiring to. But very much looking forward to it. As you say, we've not really seen much of it at all, have we, the course? Yeah, save for the amateur championship was played back in 2013, I think it was, wasn't it? With Matt Fitzpatrick won there. Yeah. That's the last bit of kind of tangible form that we've got. So, yep, looking forward to it.
It looks great.
Have you got a thought on the course?
I had a look at the flyover videos, and it looks brilliant. It feels like it's going to set up for just a really exciting mix of birdies being available on some of the shorter holes, and then par being an absolutely phenomenal score on other holes, which I think is it's a pretty cool blend to have. You know, tests you from A to Z on the different kind of ways you have to score in golf. Go make a birdie when we're offering you one, but you know, you better hang on to par when it's a really tough hole.
Yeah.
So it's it looks like it's really going to give the full suite of tests for the players this week to get around. Did you notice any just, you know, looking at the holes, it seems like a little bit of a draw bias.
Yeah.
A draw might be a favorable shot shape or something at least very neutral.
I was listening to Pat Mayo's research pod or show the other week. Not the other day. It seems like weeks, the amount of time I spent on the US Open. In fact, on the majors this year. But this is my last major, by the way. I hand over to Paul for the last one. So this, crazily enough, this is my last major of 2022. I can't quite get my head around that. Pat had some insight from some local caddies, and they were saying that the place to miss around Brookline is always to the right of the fairway rather than the left. I don't know if there's anything in that.
Interesting.
I don't know if that correlates with what you're saying about a draw rather than the fade.
Well, it's just not really, like, it's just a shot shape on the holes, but maybe like the worst of the rough is at like the elbow of these dog legs. So if you go through and long, maybe.
Mm.
It seems there's plenty of holes that you can see are going to be very, very tempted to the big drivers. And if they can keep it on the fairway, I mean, there's one hole on the front nine where it's all, the hole is surrounded by kind of those natural mounds and it's following these mounds. It's very linksy looking. And there's one point of the fairway where I think it thins down to 8 yards wide. And then the other side, it widens out. And if you can get through that gap, you've basically got a 70-yard chip into the green, where if you're laying up short of that, you've got 150 in. There's a couple of holes like that.
Threading the eye of a needle.
Yeah, and I suppose these pros, all they're doing is they're going, these guys that can hit it a long way are just scouring these holes in the practice rounds. If I do miss it and it goes in the rough here, does that still leave me a shot? And that's what they're working out right here, right now.
Yeah.
It's a great course. There does look, for a US Open course, there looks like an unusual amount of risk and reward on some of these
holes.
I guess
the proof will be how difficult it is to reach the green or to, you know, are you chipping out if you're going into the deep rough? And we've seen we've seen the early videos. Was it Guido who put that?
Guido, yeah. Last Saturday,
the first video up of balls disappearing into the rough, and that's always the case. You know, did he pick the most densely grassed part to showcase how deep the rough was? Is that atypical of the rest of the course? Because if it is, then a lot of these, you know, miss the fairway, you're going to be chopping out sideways. But if that's not generally the case, then it does allow the longer hitters to open the shoulders up a little bit and take on some of these dog legs, as you said, and cut these holes down to a manageable size.
I saw a tweet from a guy yesterday that was on the course following a lot of the practice rounds, and he said, from his perspective, the rough was still more than manageable for the players to be in it. Now, of course, that's generalising across a 7,300-yard golf course. And like you said, Paul, there's going to be some rough that's up to your knees and some rough that isn't. But I think he's basically saying if you keep it within some kind of confines to the fairway, it's manageable right now as of Monday.
Yeah.
But whether they've got those greens humming and singing that they'd like them to, we'll find out. The other thing is, I heard JT say that the greens are as small as he can remember when he played the amateur, but what he'd forgotten is just how undulating they are. So not only are they small, there's plenty of contours in them.
Yeah, and a lot of them slope from one side to another, don't they?
Front to back. A lot of Donald Ross kind of style to it, front to back greens.
Yeah, and this is the point. If you leave yourself under the hole with an uphill putt, then it's manageable. If you leave yourself the other side and, you know, a 30, 40, 50 footer that's bending, that's downhill, then keeping it within 6, 8, 10 feet sometimes is going to be a challenge. And that's where it brings three putt avoidance into the equation. And to your point, to your tweet yesterday, Barry, that's another factor to consider for this week. Those players that can knock it dead from, you know, from pretty much anywhere on the green.
Or hole out really well from the inside of 6 foot for the week. you just know that somebody in the top five coming down the stretch, they're going to show a stat that he's like 59 for 59 from inside of 6 or 7 foot for the week.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean he's going to win, but there'll always be one person that does that. So, and that'll be one of the reasons why he's up there, and then there'll be another reason why another guy is up there, because he's hit more greens than reg. And
he hasn't made a bogey for 37 holes.
Well, yeah, that's not going to happen.
It seems unlikely.
It feels like there might be more than one way to skin a cat in getting yourself up there this week.
Yeah.
I don't know what that is, but it feels like there might be a few different ways to get yourself up the leaderboards.
Yeah, well, it's not stupidly long, the course, so it's going to enable players of various different styles and types to contend, and the shorter hitters who can find a lot of fairways, find the right part of greens, are going to give themselves a chance. The longer hitters are going to find ways to take on some of these holes, fly some of these dog legs and leave themselves some shorter irons in that give themselves scoring opportunities. It's going to be fascinating. It's going to be a very open, and you can see that from the betting market, it's going to be a very open US Open.
Yeah. I mean, on the face of it, this is, if it plays out like we're thinking it might, with different ways to approach and attack the course, it's kind of the perfect setup. It's what you always want, like something that's quite fair and allows different skill sets and different lengths of players to compete on the same course, rather than overly favoring one style or the bombers.
Yep.
Which is, it's great. It makes it really difficult to pick your bets. But I've been struggling quite deeply with where to kind of land.
I think the USGA have also got a leg up from the weather, because I'm seeing nothing more than a 50% chance of rain on Friday. Apart from that, Thursday through Saturday, Sunday, very, very low chance of rain. So, in essence, I think there might have been a little bit of rain yesterday, but the USGA can pretty much do what they want. The one thing that does slightly go against that is, I don't think this is going to be as windy as we saw at the PGA. I don't think it's going to be as windy as that, but it's going to be gusting 20 miles an hour. Definitely on Friday, definitely on Saturday. And it also looks similar for the more Sunday as well. And I've read anything over 12 to 15 around here is just adding a whole level of pain. So whether that means that they also need to just bear that in mind with the green speeds, just to make sure that we don't have any trouble that you had last week at Cairn Golf Links, Barry, with your oscillating balls.
And that, do you know what? They set up the course phenomenal. They didn't cut them for the Saturday when the wind was at its heaviest. So we didn't encounter any kind of moving of the balls.
You had no oscillations?
In spite of the... just my head was spinning. That was about it. then they gave them a little cut for Sunday. And it all worked out great. When you're thinking that the wind was gusting 50 miles an hour and you don't have to stop play, you've hit the nail on the head.
So there's wind in play. The only thing I will say, and this goes back to the potentially close to the top of the show, Thursday looks like it could be calmer for the morning starters. This on Windfinder, wind forecast change, blah, 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 blah. Windfinder doesn't tend to be that far wrong, though. I'll give it, that's why I use it. It's pretty spot on. We haven't got a micro forecast for Friday, but Friday looks as a whole windier. So if you're kind of got the windier end of the draw on Thursday in the afternoon, and then you're coming out Friday morning and the wind's gone up a level from the previous day, and it could potentially, by the looks of it, start to dissipate towards the end of Friday, that might suggest that an AM-PM split might get some form of advantage this week. And as I said, I have no idea who's in what. Can either of you read out some names that are kind of morning starters and PM starters?
Morning, Morikawa, Rahm, Spieth, Scott, Homa, Horschel, Cantley, Berger, Rory, Matsuyama, Schauffele. Let me see. Joaquin is there.
This isn't going well.
There's plenty of time for that forecast to change, Steve.
Yeah. Well, you haven't mentioned any of my tips yet, which is really, really motivating. Keep going.
Yeah, I think we're running out of morning names for you there, Steve. Who do you want? Talk to me.
He takes a deep sigh. There is a yes. Well, do you want me to tell you who my five tips are? They're none of the names you've read out, which is slightly concerning.
Maybe let's not do them all in one go.
I'll give you a little ray of sunshine, Steve. Will Zalatoris is teeing off at 8:02 a.m.
Oh, good. I've got Will. So out of five, at least I've got one which could potentially be on the right side of any draw bars. Mm. But as we said, yes, forecasts do change. I tell you what I like, and a lot of this is in my preview. Ultimately, recent US Opens going all the way back to 2017 and Brooks Koepka have been won by a elite player. I think there's something here about if we could go back all the way to GMAC in 2010, he is the longest in terms of official world golf ranking. He was 37th when he won. So every winner of a US Open has been sub 37th in the world rankings going back to 2010. So yeah, okay. A good player wins the US Open. Tick. That doesn't often or all the time translate to price though, because if you go back over the same time period, I am calculated that the winning odds of the US Open winner is 38-1. That juicy mid-range spot that we like. And yes, John Rahm won at 10-1 last year. I think he was the favourite. We've had Jordan Spieth win at 9-1. You do get those outliers where the faves win. But you also get your DeChambeaus at 25. Of course, Gary Woodland. And we have the Woodland Whisperer with us on the show. 80-1 back in 2019. Koepka at 25s, 45s. Dustin Johnson, 16-1. Kaimer, 40-1. Rose, 28-1. So it does give you a level of hope that we can pick up one of these winners that's in that nice, juicy 20s up to 40-50-1 kind of mark. Although I know that we've gone through the players and some of the prices this week, and a lot of them they look very overcooked on their price. They don't fill you with much enthusiasm, some of the prices, it must be said. But ultimately, if I'm looking at game shape, and again, I will put a link in the podcast description through to my US Open research preview. Someone who hits the ball a bloody long way tends to ultimately win this. DeChambeau. Clearly, Rahm was both long and straight last year. Gary Woodland was in the top 20 for driving distance and driving distance all drives the year he won. DJ doesn't need any explanation. And Brooks Koepka, twice. So I like that trend. I like the trend of people that can get the ball out there ultimately. Because I do think that this tends to be a... And yes, the US Open changes courses and moves around, but there is definitely a US Open type setup. And for me, it tends to benefit, not exclusively, but ultimately it tends to actually benefit a bomber, a skilled bomber. And let's be frank, most of the guys at the top of the official world rankings are said skilled bombers. I also like this current trend that we're seeing of players that have had a successful major campaign, their previous major outing. Paul also gave me some very useful statistics around recent performances of guys in terms of, I like a guy that's at the peak of his driving powers as they enter the US Open. Someone that's driving the ball very, very nicely off strokes going off the tee. You can look at all-round performance of their latest tournament. You can also look at potentially total driving as a number as well. Those are the kind of angles that I've looked at for my selections this week. Ultimately, my five selections, one won their last outing in a major. We have one that was in the top 30 at their last major outing. I've got one that finished second in their last major, one that finished eighth in their last major, and one that finished fifth in their last major. So that's how close to that trend I've kept my selections this week. Because that trend of top 21 in majors previous goes back all the way to Bryson DeChambeau, 2020 US Open.
Yeah, it's really quite stark, and we touched on it quite a lot in the research preview. But it seems that those players who have that very recent feeling of contending or being kind of in the mix or fringy mix,
yeah,
at a recent major.
But you went back further than that, didn't you? You've gone back to previous US Opens, and there's a huge link that goes way back, isn't there? That's something you focused on last pod.
Yeah, I think it's something like the last 17 majors, and if you're top 40 or better on the previous major, then that's a huge tick in the box for the forthcoming major. And yeah, logically, it all makes sense, doesn't it? It's that feeling of, you know, being able to contend and compete at a major, and then you take the step forward, the next step, the following time the chance gets presented to you.
Yeah, I get that.
Very logical.
I get that. Okay. I suppose it's time to talk about our selections. At the top of the shop for me, we've got Rory as the 11-1 favourite, 12-1 JT, 14-1 Scheffler, world number one, 16-1 John Rahm. And this has changed, hasn't it? It's changed since the Masters, where if I go back to the Masters, wouldn't it 12 players sub 22-1? We then got a bit of a jump to 22-1, Cam Smith. 25's Xander, the US Open whisperer. I say 25s, he's 25-1 in a place, Bet Victor, five places in a quarter. He's genuinely 22.
Yeah. Spieth, standard Xander price.
Yeah, standard Xander price. 28-1 Spieth Cantlay. 30-1 Burns Fitzpatrick. I'd also throw Willie Z in there at 30s and Morikawa as well. And then we're out to 35s. The likes of Tony T2 Finau, Victor Hovland, Shane Lowry. Shane Lowry, if you want extended places, he's as short as 22s and 25s, quite rightly. So yeah, it's obvious from what I've just said. My top of the shop, you know, we were talking about Rory and his fantastic form at the moment, which is 100% true. If you were to oppose Rory at the top, there's only one for me, and it's JT. His form currently reads 5-1, miscut 3. Don't mind that. I think he's got Jim Bones McCarr in the bag. I think that has brought him into a better mental space. He mentioned in an interview yesterday at the US Open that he's trying to be in a space where he doesn't throw away major championships, and he's more patient. Because in the past, he's got into a bit of a stupor, and he's got to a point of a tournament where it's kind of now and never, and he's let himself mentally step away from the golf course, as he classified it, and thrown it away. Bones keeps him far more grounded. Paul's been saying this to me for a number of days. He thinks that this golf course is really going to benefit players that have got an experienced guy on the bag, because there's so many blind tee shots. There's so much strategy required off the tee. There's so many uphill approaches to greens, the green surfaces you can't see. There's a lot of intricacy to this course. I think having a top caddy on the bag and someone that can keep your mental state right, for me, is a big advantage. thing that grabbed me about JT last week, seventh for total driving, first for strokes gained off the tee. Don't forget, that's JT's weakness. And yes, I know on the 71st hole, he spread it and blah, blah, blah. But he was also fourth for greens in regulation, third for ball striking, and first in the all-round category last week at St George's. And we have seen since 2006, four players go back-to-back with majors. Tiger, Padraig Harrington, Rory McIlroy himself, and Jordan Spieth. So it is more than possible. And do you know what? If we go back, and we're recording this on Tuesday, and I say, do you know what? I had Justin Thomas. He won at 12-1. I'd be more than happy with that. I don't think it's an unfair price. So yeah, JT for me. Also mentioned in his interview today how he thrives now on tougher challenges and grinding golf. All the things I wanted to hear.
Hey, there's, you know, before he won the PGA Championship, he's one of those players who you're thinking, well, he hasn't really won as many majors as perhaps he should have for the quality of player that he is, the quality of golf that he plays. And, you know, should he win this week? Should he, you know, combined with the fact that he won at Southern Hills, that's what, three majors then, and you know, he's back into the kind of scope where, or kind of the place that you'd expect a player of his quality to be and to building it from there. Scheffler missed cut the USPGA. That's a little bit off-putting. Yeah. John Rahm was down the field as well, and I'm not sure John's got all of his best golf at the moment. So yeah, if at the top it is most likely between Rory and JT, and different approach to Rory coming in off the back of a win. I don't think the fact that he won last week will hinder him in any way, shape or form. In a lot of ways, coming in on top form is, it's got to be the way that he approaches it. But he's trying to find that final piece of the jigsaw, and it's perhaps it will all come together this week.
Listen to this, Paul. Driving distance all. I looked at approach proximity from 100 to 125, so wedge, 150 to 175, mid-iron, 200 plus. Scrambling from over 30 yards, I think you're going to have plenty of that this week. Sand saves around the green game. Justin Thomas, his lowest rank across any of those this season, is 20th for around the green game. I can't say the same for Rory McIlroy when I look at his numbers. They're not, I mean, they're good, don't get me wrong. But there's a couple of categories where he's not in the top 60, 70 that you would want to see. That's the only, and that's how you have to split players, isn't it, really? You have to find a way of differential. But if there's one guy that's going to take momentum from a winning performance and then win a major off the back of it, it is Rory McIlroy. There's absolutely no doubt about that. The other thing I like at the moment, those two, Rory and Justin, are by far the most outspoken PGA Tour players about this LIV situation. Yeah. And I think that's inspiring them. You could see that on Sunday, couldn't you? You could see that at St George's, inspiring them. So, you know, Rory took the plaudits last week. I would have thought JT would be sitting there thinking, I want the plaudits this week.
Yeah. What did JT say to him at the end? Let's do it all again next week. Yeah. Something like that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I'm on JT at the top. My next selection is 28-1. So I don't know who you guys fancy. So do you want me to carry on, or is there a price or player that you want to go through?
My two shorter prices are two the same as you. So there's no, you can carry on. Other than that, I'm down into the three figure bracket. So okay. Done about you, Barry.
Oh, Paul, that's interesting. I'm weighing up, do I bet Rory or not? I don't. I don't know how to figure it out. It's Rory or JT. I think there's a very distinct possibility we could see a Rory JT showdown this Sunday again. And that makes it difficult to pick between the two of them. I think they're just that little bit above the rest of the pack at the moment. But then kind of, because Spieth wasn't around last week, he's kind of just dropped off the radar a little bit, and he's, I think there's some value in his price out there.
I was on Spieth at both the Masters and the US, the PGA, and yeah, he didn't fire. That doesn't mean he doesn't fire this week at a US Open, but do you know what? I sat here and I've been going down the same route at majors for far too long and ultimately being disappointed. Do you know what? I thought, no, I'm actually going to go down the route of some form young talent this year. Right, and players that I used to look at and go, oh, you know, he hasn't done this or he hasn't got that. I've said, no, I'm just going to go for talent, mate. Players that are playing some of the best golf of their careers, if not the best golf, who are suited to the course and just go with them. I'm not sure that Jordan's at the peak of his powers right now.
I think if he gets a hot week with the putter, then it's game on. But I don't think, then again, like with what we've said about the course, I don't think you need an outrageous week with the putter to be up there. If the scores are just a few digits under par, then par is a very good score and you can just do an awful lot of two-putting. I'm really struggling with it this year. The first bet I have on so far, I've backed Tony Finau.
T2. I knew you'd be T2. On him. You are the T2 whisperer.
T2 will be numero uno this week, I hope. Well, look, it was... it was
classic.
I was just going through all the odds, blah 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 blah, and then having a look in the different into the bookmakers as well to see what kind of offers were there. And I just had 40-1 pushed in my face by Bet365, 8 places, 150 odds, and that was very tempting. So I grabbed it. The guy seems to be coming back into a bit of form. There's not an awful lot of water on the course, as you've noted. T2 does not, he's not waterproof.
There wasn't a lot of water last week at St. George's, and look, bang, right at the top of the leaderboard. He's found the putter, isn't he? Look at T2, even when he was struggling this season, it wasn't his ball striking. In fact, he was quite high in most of my tee to green numbers and all the numbers you want to see. He was just like, as ever, with most of these players, it was the short stick. Could not make a putt. Now, son, got some confidence with a putter, and lo and behold, top of the leaderboard. He's a major machine, isn't he?
He's got some record. It really is something else. And he could just turn up when it's... he seems to just turn up when the test gets that little bit harder. Let's see if he do it.
Not a bad bet, man.
40-1 was nice when you're seeing high 20s.
Was that in a boost, Barry?
There was a boost, yeah. I've talked to you guys. Is this going to be a thing where you guys follow me in and then he's dead because we've all backed him?
No, I'm not.
I'm putting an embargo on you guys backing Finau now this week.
I'd prefer him not to have done what he did last week, because we touched on him on the preview pod and he ticked an awful lot of boxes. And at the time, he was around about 50-1 best price. Of course, the place hasn't been extended by that point. So sitting biding a time, and of course, he goes and does what he did last week and it shaves a good third, if not close to a half of his price over the course of a couple of days.
I think I know the answer before I ask the question. Have you actually listened to our podcast that we did for the Research US Open?
Why do you ask all the difficult questions, Steve?
Because I know the answer. So you might as well listen to it, because at least it helps the download number. Came out with a magical list of 16 players, right? That is our best guess. One of those guys is going to win the US Open. Tony Finau was one of those 16. Now, I'm not going to go through the 16. If you want to hear them, listen to the Research podcast. But Finau is on that list.
That's very, it's very mean. I mean, listen, I'm just, my intuition then is seems to be lining up with some stats backing it up. So kind of the standard way I end up picking things: make the pick and then find the rationale after it's been
post-rationalizing.
post-bet rationale. He's the first one that kind of felt like a good price versus characteristics of the player going into this week. So I'm not going to have all my bets made by the end of this podcast, so let's put it that way, which is an unusual week.
I've got to say, that was brave from Bet365 to boost Fina. I mean, you sit there and you go, oh, well, they'll boost Koepka, they'll boost him. But Finau, at the peak of his powers in Canada, coming to a major that he's majors that he's always performed well in, to boost that price, yeah, that's brave.
I think they seem to put a toe in the water with various players and see how the reaction is, and keep an eye on Twitter, and then it suddenly explodes with a player who's popular. The price has been extended by 20-30%,
It's not as if it's a win-only price, is it? It's an each-way price.
No, it was each-way. Yeah, and I matched their boost by boosting my points staked, so let's see if we can really punish them for it.
Interesting.
Double boost.
I've gone for another player on Paul's magical list of 16. That is Sam Burns. He's just 4 wins in 28. 9th in the world, 2nd in the FedEx Cup, 2nd in the President's Cup. I'd look at Sam Burns usually and say, well, hadn't done very well in majors, I'm not going to include him. But actually, PGA Championship last month, howling wind, tough golf course, was 10th going into Sunday. I remember him also being very close to the top of the leaderboard in the Players' Championship. Didn't have a great Sunday. I can also remember him finishing 2nd at WGC. So, you know, he's done well. He's doing better and done well in WGC level. But the guy just seems to be a precocious talent to me. The guy can hit the ball a long way. You just look at his statistics again, that you don't find many holes with Burns. Decent enough around the green. Okay, bunker maybe not, but his approach play, I mean, he's ranks number one with wedges from 100 to 125. He's got enough oomph off the tee. I'm on Burns. I just thought the way that he was mixing it with McIlroy, with Finau, and of course with Thomas last week, just sitting there in the slipstream, playing some very, very nice golf.
Yep.
Is that the one you're on as well?
I am, yeah. I agree on Sam Burns. I think it's the next logical step for him is to step up to serious contention at a major championship. And just to back up your points on his approach, first for strokes gained approach last week, fifth strokes gained tee to green. And when he won at Colonial, that was sixth for strokes gained off the tee that week.
Yeah.
All of his long game stats looking good. 65-65 weekend last weekend, and that's not too
and shame, barely got a mention.
Yeah, fourth place. Yeah, you know, of the players in that kind of 25 to 30 to 33 to 1 bracket, I think he's the most likely to reward each way backers, and I think he'd give you a run for his money. As you say, 4 wins in what the last just over 12 months.
I've plotted his career, good. Paul. Even you go back to 2018 Honda Classic. I mean, that's a PGA National. That's a brute of a golf course. You know, 7th at Memorial Park 2020. He was third after 54 holes last year we're in now. Torrey Pines. There was the breakout performance at Riviera Country Club where he was 18, 30. These are tough, tough golf courses. And his three of his 4 wins, 2 at Copperhead, which is, again, that's not the easiest of courses. And 1 at Colonial. You know, this isn't a guy that's winning at 35 under. He's playing proper big boy golf courses and winning on them.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think he suits.
Yep. And you're not getting the most outlandish price on him, but I'm seeing 30 to 1 with 9 places right now with William Hill, which I think is more than fair.
I've also got 30 to 1 with William Hill, 9 places each way, and Will Zalatoris. He doesn't need much, really, does he? I mean, he doesn't need much explanation. 6th at the 2020 US Open, 2nd at the 21 Masters, 6th at this year's Masters, and 2nd at the PGA. 5th on his last outing. 13th for driving distance, all drives this year. 6th for strokes going off the tee. 1st for approach. 2nd for tee to green. He's in the top 35 for sand saves, top 40%. For strokes going around the green. I can't I don't really understand why Will wouldn't be or can't be towards the top of this leaderboard when he was so competitive at the PGA. He seems to be the kind of golfer, because, you know, he's not the best putter, but Barry said earlier, I don't think putting's going to win this tournament. He mentioned that with Jordan Spieth. So someone like a Will Z that seems to have that mental capability to play par golf when needs to and just comes to the fore at tougher courses, screams Willie Z, this test to me.
Yeah, he's certainly been turning it on and on major championships. That much is clear. He seems to have a game that is suited to majors. So, yeah, I've not backed him myself, but I can see him featuring on the leaderboard. It's quite likely.
Uh, 45-1, I got on Sung Jae-im. Now, Barry was mentioning Sung Jae-im on the build-up to the PGA Championship as one that he had on his radar. Didn't play the PGA. There was some kind of COVID situation. Did he have it? Did he not? Was he out of the country? Couldn't get back in? There was all this kind of shenanigans going on. Never got to the bottom of it. It doesn't really matter. All that matters is that since he's come back to the PGA Tour, 15th at Colonial, 10th last time out at Muirfield Village, statistically, absolutely spot on. Only problem with him, I found out, is he's been undercussed on the Pat Mayo show, and that tends to mean complete and utter devastation when Anderson's on him. So I'm on him at 45-1, Sung Jae-im. I think in that kind of part of the betting market, he stood out to me. And you look at his history again, great Florida record, a winner. His first title was at the Honda Classic. He's had a couple of thirds at Bay Hill. Last major performance, Paul, 8th at Augusta.
Yeah.
Was he third going into Sunday? He was up right up there.
Yeah. And we finished second in that rearranged one back at the end of 2020 as well, didn't he?
He's on your magical list of 16.
Yep. He is.
So's Alatoris.
Yeah. Sungjae's another one I've backed as well. He's been very heavily backed, hasn't he? You can see that, and the price in the options are starting to deteriorate. I took 12 places at 40-1, which it gives me a good chance, I guess, of actually getting a return out of him.
Our friend Jeff Feinberg, he said on the show that it's his heaviest ever bet on a player at that kind of range of odds that he's ever had.
Right.
So, whatever that means.
Jeff plucks out a few winners, so perhaps we should listen.
I'm on him. And then my final selection, a US Open hardcore kind of player. I put in my commentary, this is the kind of guy who plays keep calm and carry on golf. Tommy Fleetwood. I've got 50-1, 11 places each way with Ball Sports, which I really like. Because I could just see Tommy being in the top 20, 25 coming into the weekend, and just as all the others start to lose their shit, Tommy just stays there and starts poking his head into the top 10. So I'm on Fleetwood. So those are my five. Fleetwood, Im, Zalatoris, Burns, Thomas. I know you've got some long shots, Paul, and I'm sure Barry's got a couple to add, so I'll keep quiet now.
Yeah, I've got three. I put a long shots page out yesterday with some thoughts, and the three I've backed in that. Firstly, Luke List. I backed him. You've got two options, I guess. I backed him with 12 places each way with Betfair, 125-1. You could take him at 150s with fewer places, 9 places option at the moment. But yeah, in keeping with the longer price and given there's so many players at the top of the market, I've taken as many places as I can with these long shots. So Luke List, 125-1, 12 places. And for a three-figure shot, he does tick an awful lot of boxes. 5th for driving distance, all drives, which is that stat that we pulled out in the research preview. 41st at the PGA Championship last month. So I guess if you go in top 40, he just misses out. But I'm not going to split hairs over one place in total. I'm going to include him on the back of that. at Southern Hills, 4th for total driving, 13th for driving accuracy, 2nd for strokes gained off the tee. All of those stats are pretty ideal for this week. And look at his win that he got earlier in the year, Torrey Pines. I don't think you can discount that, really. Good Poana form there. That was his best strokes gained putting effort on those greens for nearly 3 years. You go back to his best prior to that, best putting performance prior to that. Again, it was on a pretty power heavy surface at Bethpage Black back in 2019.
Top six, wasn't it?
As you know, two of his best putting performances, and he's not a good putter. Don't get me wrong. He's I'm not going to try and profess that Luke List is suddenly turned into Brad Faxon. But on Poana, he seems to have some slight upside, which could be positive for a player who's so good from tee to green. First round league the last time out at Memorial, just let it drift on the Sunday. I think he could find his way into the places list.
Yeah.
Gary Woodland I've backed as well. Again, 125 to 1 with 12 places. If you want a longer price, Unibet goes 7 places, but 150s. Again, I think 125 with 12 is the better option here. I backed Woodland back at the PGA Championship, and he was right in there, wasn't he? He was 10th after 36 holes. He was 10th after 54 holes. Just couldn't put it together on the Sunday to get me an each-way place, but I'll give him another chance. And again, he ticks most of the boxes here. Inside the top 50 for driving distance, all drives. He won the 2019 US Open at Pebble. That was something you mentioned a little bit earlier on, Steve. Again, Poana, I know it's West Coast. Poana greens, tiny, small greens at Pebble Beach as well. So I think there'll be some similarities to that this week here. Bethpage Black again, talking of that about Luke List, 4th and 8th there for Woodland over the years. Not bad form for this, I don't think. It's been a bit up and down this year, but you've got a couple of top 5 finishes at the Honda, Arnold Palmer Invitational as well. He got a top 5 finish, a couple of missed cuts since Southern Hills, so that's added a little bit of juice to his price, I think, rather than anything else. And he's the kind of player that can bounce back from a couple of missed cuts and get himself into the mix, I think. So yeah, Woodland's in. The other one I've backed is Victor Perez. 200 to 1 with 10 places I've backed him. Again, you could take him with 7 places for 250s, but I think taking the extra places is the way to go here. Think back to last year. We had Guido Migliozzi. He snuck into a top 4 position in the end. He was 500 to 1. And if you look at Migliozzi, how he'd been playing and what was the European Tour at the time, he'd finished runner-up in his two previous starts before coming to the US Open and finishing top 4. And I think if there's a player who fits that kind of mould, then Victor Perez is that kind of player. He won in Holland on the DP World Tour in his penultimate start, 3rd in Germany a couple of weeks ago, and he could feasibly have won that event as well. Could be coming here off the back of 2 consecutive wins, really. Averages 308 off the tee. I guess if we had this driving distance all drives category on the DP World Tour, he'd be ticking that box as well. 36th for strokes gained off the tee. And on those last two outings, 2nd and 6th for total driving, 2nd and 9th for strokes gained off the tee, 1st and 2nd for strokes gained tee to green. The guy's absolutely striping it at the moment, Victor Perez. And there's a little bit of elite form in there as well. 4th at the WGC HSBC Champions back in 2019. So WGC level form. More WGC level form last year at the match play. He made the semi-finals, finished 4th in the end. Top 10 at TPC Sawgrass. I think there's he's a talented guy. He's at the top of his game right now. I've got a feeling he's got a chance of placing here at a decent 200 to 1 price point. So, yeah, Victor Perez, Gary Woodland and Luke List as my 3 triple-digit plays this week. Any of those tickle your fancy, Barry?
I'm on Gary as well. Nothing more to add. Price is just too tempting.
Yeah, yeah. You got to take him at that price. You got to take a chance on him, I think, haven't you?
Yeah, a lot of good reasons to back him. Few to not, but you know, that price and that combo of places, yeah, give me, I'll take it. I've backed Seamus Power, Patriot bet. Not much more to add to that. He seemed to go through a little blip of form there a few weeks back, and you know, a couple of missed cuts.
He was ninth at the USPGA or something like that, wasn't he? Really impressive.
So that'll help the head. And, you know, an Irishman playing golf in Boston, which is quite a high percentage Irish vibe in the region. Just pick little things like that. Give it a go. I'm very tempted on Shane as well. I think I'll probably back Shane too. He should be winning something with the way he's playing. And last week he was up and down like a roller coaster. So yeah, maybe he gets rid of the bogeys this week, or a few of the bad ones that kind of knock you out of play. You know, he kind of...
Well, that's the thing that frustrated me last week, having backed him. He was playing some great stuff, and you think, you get into the mix, mate, right? And then, on that leaderboard, you see the leaderboard, and he kept popping up right at the bottom of that bottom screen leaderboard, many, many points, and all of a sudden, bogey. You think, oh, Shane. If he can just cut some of those stupid bogeys out, he's going to go very close.
Yeah, just a little bit of housekeeping because everything else is really good.
Yeah.
So, yeah, hopefully, I think I will. I don't think I can resist backing him. There's just something bubbling there that has to give soon. He either just completely goes off the boil or he wins. So.
What about Homer? See, you're a bit of a Homer whisperer like I am. Ticks a lot of boxes. Top 13, I think, in the PGA. He's on Paul's magical list of 16.
Yeah, winner there not so long ago. That could be it then. Back Shane, back Homa, and Finau, and Woodland and Power, and that's it. Stop betting.
Yeah, draw a line under it then. He putted absolutely lights out on his last start, Homa. 99 putts over the course of 4 days, which is incredible.
It's logically or kind of, trajectory wise, it's the next step in Max's career. And he's been, like I said, we've said, he's been adding the building blocks to it as he's gone along. Major's the next step.
Yeah.
What price is Homa? I'm at the wrong end of the end of the betting chart.
Pretty 30. Much 35s, 40s with the little shorter places, 45s in very short places. Or if you want to take him 12 places, he's 25s. Probably would avoid that. I'll take the shorter. I'll take the shorter places and a higher price.
There's a blend in there if you want it, isn't there?
You've got this new guard there, haven't you? You've got DJ at 40s, Matsuyama, everyone's worried about his neck, and then you get him, Homa, Koepka, Young. You've got Berger in there. You've got some really sort of a brigade there. And Billy Ho right in the middle. Billy Ho at 25-1 for a major. Jesus.
Did you ever think we'd see DJ at 40s?
Yeah, there's a lot of water going under the bridge there, don't there, with all of these live guys. I tell you one I was going to ask for your opinion of, both of you guys, before we shut off. There's a guy that keeps jumping into my mind just looking at statistics, and Paul mentioned Guido, a player that was on the DP World Tour, playing exceptional stuff, absolutely nowhere on the radar, really, over in the States. I'm thinking Ryan Fox. Now, he's 300-1 with 10-bet. But of course, you're only getting your five places according to odds, but at 300-1. You can get 200-1 on him with 10 places, or 150 with 11s at Boyles. Yep. So you can take your poison. But you just look at what he's been doing, Fox. His form is pretty mega, isn't it? It really is. Ninth in Spain at Catalunya, eighth at the Belfry, second in the Sudal Open, 54th PGA Championship, second Dutch Open. He kind of follows that Guido route.
Yeah. You know, I did have a look at him. There's some logic there. And again, there's some kind of linksy similarities, aesthetically at least, with some of the, the way the Southern Hill, the way the Brookline sets up. And that's where he tends to do a lot of his best work, is that kind of anything that either is or aesthetically has similarities to that kind of Lynxy setup. I have this feeling with Fox that when push comes to shove, he just gets a bit, it just tightens up a bit. And I know he's won recently, and should have won more than that. There were chances again for him to win far more than he has done recently. And the biggest stage, does that tightening up happen further back in the tournament? Is it, does it prevent him getting into the mix? I don't know. At the price, you could take a chance on him for a few quid, yeah. As a wild outsider.
PGA finished 54th. He shot 70-70-70 Sunday 77. That kind of backs up what you said, isn't it?
Yeah.
He must have been, what, top three straight 70s? Must have been there or thereabouts. Top 10, top 15 going into Sunday?
Yeah, it'd have been fringy. It'd have been fringy for a place with the extended extended terms. If he got all together on a Sunday. Mm. And he can get over the line. He's proven he can do it. There was just enough there to put me off taking a punt on him, but I couldn't give you I wouldn't put anyone off if they really wanted to take a chance for a couple of quid.
I think that's us chaps, isn't it?
Indeed.
I hope your US Open bets go well.
Yeah, best of luck, chaps.
I don't know whether to just go on there and start backing Homer, Finau, Lowry, just to cheese off Barry. What do you think?
I thought we were friends.
Exactly. Hope your bets go well, chaps. I hope listeners' bets go well on DK teams. We will be back next week for the Travelers Championship and the BMW International Open on the DP World Tour. Have a great week. See you soon.
If you like betting on golf, but everyone that you back misses the cut, get some experts involved with all the stats and the tips and so much more. 'Cause it's the golf betting system, the golf betting system, it's the golf.